Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Australia, a country where voting is compulsory and the results don't matter. You're listening to Truth News Radio on the 19th of September 2015. I'm Harold Fenton. Great to be with you today. For our international listeners, you may have noticed that Australia has had another change of leadership. From some reports I've read, this is 5 leaders in 5 years. I haven't double-checked that, but it sounds about right. We have entered a new phase in Australian pseudo-democracy. And this is a phase where political parties are merely vehicles for delivering whatever is required and have no connection to policy whatsoever. What I mean is that there is no longer any concept of loyalty within political parties. There used to be, and you know, for many decades there have been governments that were very unpopular, with leaders that were very unpopular. But you know, the fierce loyalty that was in place prevented leaders from being deposed. And even though I disagreed with a lot of that, and John Howard is a great example, he was a leader for 12 years and he was greatly despised. But that was an earlier phase. That was a kinder phase of our society than what we now have. We now enter into a phase which, to quote one Enlightenment scientist philosopher, is akin to the atmosphere of a brute nature, where life is nasty, brutish, and short. And this is really a kind of new jungle mentality in politics, which has a lot of things to be worried about, folks, because when you get that level of primitive functioning in an ostensibly highly civilized society, you have to wonder what's really coming, what's on the cards. I tend to think that it's a sign of breakdown. It's a sign of the collapse of a certain type of system, a certain type of world order. Those who fear the impending new world order see that we are heading towards something which is going to be vastly totalitarian and monolithic. I actually don't see it that way, and I do have a more positive take on this than many may have. I think that what we're just seeing now is really the breakdown of a defunct, degenerate way of life, but that within that there are the seeds of a future that could be a lot more hopeful and a lot more positive. Now, in today's show, I am going to be going into some aspects of the Abbott Turnbull fracas, but I don't really want to dwell on that too much. I want to go straight in to the core questions here about climate change, because as everyone knows, the key difference between Turnbull and Abbott, if we forget superficial crowd pleasers like positions on gay marriage, if we go to the core issues, climate change is probably the dominant one. And as we know, Malcolm Turnbull is a former banker, formerly of Goldman Sachs, and Turnbull has certainly allied himself in the past with those forces that wish to bring in a universal carbon tax or carbon trading scheme or whatever type of euphemism you want to use for it, a way of banks kind of manipulating money, pulling money out of the economy and centralizing it And the whole point there is centralizing it because they do want to create a kind of UN-based climate fund. And of course, we have the COP21 climate change conference coming up this December in Paris. And the key objective of that, and I'll just open the Wikipedia page for that, and this is just the general description of the conference, 2015 United Nations Climate Change Conference, to be held in Paris from November 30 to December 11. The objective of the conference is to achieve a legally binding and universal agreement on climate from all nations of the world. Leadership of the negotiations is yet to be determined. So Malcolm Turnbull's positioning now as Australian leader is very, very important for that conference. And I think we can probably expect Malcolm Turnbull to attend the conference. And, of course, in the wake of the leadership change in Australia, there are no announcements of policy changes, of course not. But what we are seeing is a lot of hand-wringing along the sidelines, particularly from the propagandistic media such as The Guardian, lamenting that Malcolm Turnbull has signed a Faustian pact on climate change, or that he is a climate change turncoat, or that he is going to disappoint many voters. This is how it will begin, because there is no way that Mr. Turnbull could have an immediate about-face on core policies of the party, but the pressure from this fake public opinion, which is really just the manufacturing of false reality by the mainstream, will put all this pressure on him. You know, I'm terribly pressured, and of course he'll attend this climate change conference where there'll be all this gloom and doom about the end of the world, and he'll be like, oh, you know, but I'm loyal to my party, but you know, there's this terrible problem looming. And of course, the pressure will mount and the pressure will mount. And who knows? We don't know what will happen. I actually believe that that it's too late. I believe that the tide has turned on climate change alarmism. And that is actually going to be my headline for this podcast. So I'm not going to be an alarmist in the sense of believing that that we are now doomed to have these idiot policies reinstated in Australia, and that that there will be this new world order of Agenda 21 climate ecotechnic dictatorship forced upon us. I believe that there were those who were working to make that happen. I believe it is still a threat, but I believe that the threat has actually receded somewhat, and I've got some evidence to back that up. And you know, the great fact is that in Australia, people did universally reject the carbon tax that Julia Gillard brought in, despite, you know, so much effort and so much propaganda to make it acceptable. And despite, you know, massive campaigns from the Greens and organisations like GetUp, you know, it didn't really work. And the fact is, the Greens and GetUp are a minority. I mean, Greens are now positioning themselves, as I said in last week's show, as a mainstream political party. But in terms of who they really represent in society, they still are a minority, especially in these extreme positions. As the Greens start to move to a more centrist position, their numbers may continue to grow. But because the Greens are kind of welded on to this now widely discredited view within science about carbon dioxide and the greenhouse effect and the real situation with our planet and the threats that that are real in regard to that, as awareness grows and as more members of the scientific community step up to demonstrate that they are skeptics, it's just getting harder and harder for the climate alarmists to push their agenda. But they're not going to stop trying. It's not going to be over quickly. And I mean, let me just read to you some of this rubbish from TheGuardian.com. Malcolm Turnbull's Faustian pact on climate change is heartbreaking. Over recent days, and bit by bit, Australians have been coming to understand the price that Malcolm Turnbull was willing to pay to achieve his long-held personal ambition of becoming Prime Minister. Australians are beginning to understand the extent to which he was willing to discard so many long-held beliefs to satisfy that ambition. Nowhere has that price been higher than in relation to climate change and environmental protection policy. This was, after all, the signature difference between the former Prime Minister and the new Prime Minister. Many Australians held out very high hopes that Mr. Turnbull's return to the leadership of the Australian Liberal Party would see him drag the party back to the sensible centre on climate change, that there would be hope of Australia again regaining a bipartisan consensus that would allow us to move forward in the way that so many of our sister nations around the world are doing. Oh, really? So many, like Canada, you know, see, this type of language, which of course is completely synthetic, completely false, there was no huge overwhelming number of people who hoped that Mr. Turnbull would drag the party back. And indeed, doing that would have been an utter betrayal. Doing that would have meant that this man was a complete liar and a traitor to his own party. And so when you get people from the mainstream media suggesting that Turnbull should just act like a complete monster and just throw all his supporters, all the people in the party, that all the Australian voters, just throw them to the four winds and not even care about their opinion and just drag Australia back to a climate change policy, that's a hint of the deranged extremist mentality that lurks within these people who try to position themselves as being centrist and the wonderful climate change consensus and the centrist and that we'll all get together and we'll all help the world. These people don't really have those kind of views at all. They're quite happy to have extremist views. They're quite happy for leaders to lie. They're quite happy for leaders to completely ignore the mandates that brought them into power. So that's the type of element of society that is working towards bringing Australia, dragging Australia back to a climate alarmist position in its stated policies. We're going to break. More coming right up. Stay with us. It's going to be a good show. Thank you with Truth News Radio Australia. And just continuing now to bring you some of the rubbish from TheGuardian.com. They are the leading purveyor of climate nonsense on the planet. Another article here. Is new Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull already a climate change turncoat? Colourful language. Malcolm Turnbull once endorsed a common sense position on climate change. Then he became Prime Minister. During the first few days of Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull seems to be doing his best to argue about climate change with a former version of himself. Now, they bring us here a quote of what Malcolm Turnbull said 5 years ago. "We are, as humans, conducting a massive science experiment with this planet. It's the only planet we've got. We know that the consequences of unchecked global warming would be catastrophic. We know that extreme weather events are occurring with greater and greater frequency. And while it is never possible to point to one drought or one storm or one flood and say that a particular incident is caused by global warming, we know that these trends are entirely consistent with the climate change forecasts and with the climate models that the scientists are relying on." Oh, really, Malcolm? You know, back when we had a drought, back in around about 2005 to 2008, up to about 2010, we had drought, and they said, "Oh, this is totally consistent with the climate change models. Drought, just drought, drought, drought. It's going to be drought. Totally consistent." Then the drought ended, and we had massive rain, massive flooding. And then suddenly people are saying, "Oh, yes, extreme weather events are perfectly consistent with the climate change models." I mean, they just seamlessly switched over from saying drought to flooding rains. You know, I love a sunburned country. They might as well have been reading the poems of Australia. Because Australia is a land of extremes, a land of droughts and flooding rains. But whatever extreme we have, they just say, well, that's just within the models. And, of course, now they have this concept of extreme weather events. So an extreme weather event, depending on how you define it, and the definition is not, you know, in the Oxford English Dictionary, it is not a precise term, you could call a five-year drought an extreme weather event. Ooh, it's a five-year drought. Extreme weather event, extreme weather event. You could call a hurricane an extreme weather event. You could call, like, a completely static temperature for 5 years an extreme weather event because it's rather unusual. I mean, anything that's unusual could be called an extreme weather event, even if it's not dramatic. I mean, a drought isn't very dramatic, is it? It's just, like, very quiet. It doesn't rain much. Nothing much happens. That, ladies and gentlemen, is an extreme weather event and is entirely consistent with climate change forecasts. So anyway, this article here, another article from The Guardian, lamenting the terrible climate turncoat Malcolm Turnbull because he doesn't adopt the common sense position. Yes, the common sense position. And of course, he's actually going to continue with Tony Abbott's direct action policy. And I have to say, you know, even though the direct action policy still does buy in to some of the climate change hysteria, it is far less damaging and far less dangerous to real prosperity and real wealth and real happiness than the extreme measures that that the Greens would propose. And just reading here from this article, during his first question time as PM earlier this week, Turnbull was asked if he would join Labor in its aspiration that Australia should be generating 50% of its electricity from renewables by 2030. Turnbull's response. Opposition leader Bill Shorten is highlighting one of the most reckless proposals the Labor Party has made. Fancy proposing without any idea of the cost of the abatement, the cost of proposing that 50% of energy had to come from renewables. What if a reduction in emissions you needed could come more cost-effectively from climate storage, by planting trees, by soil carbon, by using gas, by using clean coal, by using energy efficiency? Well, you know, where's the middle position? Where's the common sense position? It's a lot more closer to what Turnbull is saying. But of course, I'm not endorsing Turnbull because I know that Turnbull wants us to sign that treaty. Turnbull wants to go to Paris and wants to get an agreement for us to sign that treaty. But he's going to do it softly, softly. He's Mr. Goldman Sachs. He's a very, very sophisticated, very charming man who is actually quite dangerous. He's actually more dangerous than Bill Shorten, in that because he comes from conservative side of politics and he's trying to drag the conservatives closer to the green position, he's actually a much more dangerous kettle of fish. But I don't think he's going to succeed, folks, and I want to get into that in the rest of this show because The tide has turned. The tide really has turned, and COP21 will be another, you know, grand fandango of extreme statements. They'll be talking about hottest days. Of course, Australia will be in summer at that point. There'll be terrible, terrible tales of hottest days, people sweltering under the heat. There'll probably be bushfires, as there often are. And, of course, every bushfire will be, oh, look at that, look at that. It's totally consistent with the climate models. We've had another bushfire. And, of course, they'll just ramp it up in the media while the climate change conference is going on. And there'll be all this hand-wringing and, of course, nothing will come out of it. There won't be agreement. There won't be consensus. There'll be the pretense of consensus. There'll be like a final statement which appears to shore up all of the massive cracks that will be evident from the people, from the countries represented in the conference. And, of course, the final statement will not reflect reality at all. It'll just reflect a PR statement of those who ran the conference to make it look like it wasn't a total disaster, which, of course, it will be. And this will then sort of drag out over the next year or two, because there'll be kind of undertakings made. Turnbull will try to move us towards some concept of carbon trading, some concept similar to what they have in Europe of a free market on carbon credits. But of course, as we know, in Europe, that has completely failed. The carbon price is still around about zero. So even if that happens, it won't effectively, you know, mean anything. Now, it's very interesting to just go back and now have a look at how things have actually moved along in the scientific community. And one very interesting story I want to bring to you is the fact that the American Physical Society has actually issued a new draft statement on climate change. And I wasn't even aware of this, because it's certainly they've been keeping it very, very low profile in the media. It hasn't been talked about. But there is a new draft APS statement on climate change, which has gone out to the APS members but hasn't been publicly released yet. However, it has been publicly leaked. And if you read it carefully and you compare it to the original statement that was made in 2007, it is a huge backpedal. It really is very significant. And I want to actually read to you the two versions of the statement, the original 2007 statement, and then the draft revised statement. They are worlds apart, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, the American Physical Society is a very important organization. It is the probably primary scientific organization in the United States. And of course, physics being the premium hard science, the science of scientists, it is extremely important what the official Society of Physicists has to say. And they have actually massively reversed from their position. They haven't completely reversed, and I'll get into it actually when we come back from a break, but they've removed the more extreme statements, and they've put caveats in there which, when you read it carefully and understand what it means, it's very, very significant. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just going to break, and I'll be right back. Stay with us. Ad break coming up. We'll be right back. welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm just about to read to you here the two statements that came out of the American Physical Society, one in 2007 and the new draft statement that was released to members only in April 2015. So here is the 2007 statement. Emissions of greenhouse gases from human activities are changing the atmosphere in ways that affect the Earth's climate. Greenhouse gases include carbon dioxide, as well as methane, nitrous oxide, and other gases. They are emitted from fossil fuel combustion and a range of industrial and agricultural processes. The evidence is incontrovertible. Global warming is occurring. If no mitigating actions are taken, significant disruptions in the Earth's physical and ecological systems, social systems, security and human health are likely to occur. We must reduce emissions of greenhouse gases beginning now. Because the complexity of the climate makes accurate prediction difficult, the APS urges an enhanced effort to understand the effects of human activity on the Earth's climate, and to provide the technological options for meeting the climate challenge in the nearer and longer terms. The APS also urges governments, universities, national laboratories, and its membership to support policies and actions that will reduce the emission of greenhouse gases. Now, that, of course, is a very strong statement. And the use of the word incontrovertible really raised a lot of eyebrows and raised a lot of temperature in the many, many scientists who are members of this organisation. They took offence to it, to put it bluntly. There was a massive backlash. There was kind of an uprising within the membership of the American Physical Society over this statement. Most of that didn't get reported upon because the media just doesn't like to let us know what scientists really think. They only like to let us know what the official consensus is, and that's the official consensus of the views of the scientists who agree with the views of the media and government. But of course, physicists and climate scientists are a little different, but physicists have a lot of reason to be taken seriously on the question of climate. I mean, physics is the underlying science that climate science is based upon. Atmospheric physics, of course, being the key scientific discipline. And many, many physicists are very, very expert in many aspects of what climate science talks about. So, yes, there was a protest from within the membership, and the organisation was put under a lot of pressure. And they did finally announce in 2014 that they were going to prepare a revised statement. They still haven't released it. It's taken them a long time. But they did release their draft statement to members, and that was in turn released to the general public, courtesy of the internet. And there is a Reddit page here that has the draft statement, and it's also on skeptic climate scientist Judith Curry's page, and she provides a bit of commentary on it. I'll just read to you the new draft APS statement on Earth's changing climate. Earth's changing climate is a critical issue that poses the risk of significant disruption around the globe. While natural sources of climate variability are significant, multiple lines of evidence indicate that human influences have had an increasingly dominant effect on the climate warming observed since the mid-20th century. Although the magnitudes of future effects are uncertain, human influences on the climate are growing. The potential consequences of climate change are great, and the policies of the next few decades will determine human influences on the climate for centuries. Now, I just want to highlight for you the most important sentence in the above statement I just read, and I want to elaborate on what it really means. While natural sources of climate variability are significant, multiple lines of evidence indicate that human influences have had an increasingly dominant effect on the climate warming observed since the mid-20th century. Now, note that they're saying since the mid-20th century. The previous statement made no indication of when climate effects were noticed or became evident in the global climate. The present statement draws a line which is only 65 years ago. And beyond that line, they have nothing to say. This is very, very different and very significant because almost all the climate alarmist rhetoric that we see tries to extrapolate going right back to the 19th century when they show you the graphs, when they show you the graphs of how temperature has increased. They always go right back in time, you see. And of course, it is quite dramatic when you look back and you only look at that block of time, and so you don't go back another 1,000 years or you don't go back another 2,000 years, and you just look at since the beginning of the 19th century, oh yes, the climate has actually warmed. And of course, we know that at the beginning of the 19th century, because of the Maunder minimum, which is well understood in science due to very low sunspot activity, the Earth went into a cooling phase, and it was very, very cool in the 18th century and started to warm up around about the early 19th century, and it's been warming ever since then. Thank heavens, you know, because it was very, very cold compared to how it is now. Even though it was only a couple of degrees difference, that still was significant. The Thames was freezing over every year. You know, it was a lot colder. So thank heavens it did warm up a little. But, of course, the American Physical Society now is only pointing to the last 65 years. And the amount at which the Earth has warmed in that time is under massive, massive debate. And it is really within statistical improbability. It is not statistically significant. The leading climate scientists have said that the warming since 1995 is not statistically significant. But seriously, the bigger picture, and there are many, many expert voices who will attest to this, I'm not just saying it off my own bat, the bigger picture is that in this period since the mid-20th century, the uptick in temperature, it's very small. The signal is very, very small. And the signal and the noise are very, very hard to distinguish. I'm not disputing that there has been a little bit of warming, but we know there's been warming since the end of the Maunder minimum. We know that. So it's quite natural that would have continued. So, I mean, I'm not actually even disputing that there is. It's just that it's very small, and it's totally consistent with a pattern that had nothing to do, and according to the American Physical Society, had nothing to do with human influences. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a massive turnaround of the American Physical Society, and it deserves a lot more attention. Of course, The Guardian will never mention it. It is a sign that people within that organisation have returned to their senses. The original statement I read to you, the 2007 statement, was extremist. It was alarmist. And, you know, it was using the word incontrovertible, which, of course, many, many scientists objected to. And it was pressuring its members to kind of take a political position because basically, if you adopt climate alarmist views, it becomes a political issue because it actually involves changes to the economy. We are going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point,
hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I just want to just refer you to an article by Joanne Nova, joannova.com.au. It's very important to understand that carbon markets are, they're not trivial. Just reading here from a recent article by Joanne Nova, if Turnbull signs up to carbon trading in Paris, those 54 Liberal MPs and senators who elected him will have totally sold out the voters. It's up to the Liberal Party to constrain the member for Goldman Sachs. Global carbon markets could be worth $2 trillion a year. That's right, $2 trillion a year. Bigger than coal, bigger than oil, the largest commodity traded. Financial houses around the world have been salivating for a decade at the prospect of brokering deals on a new, forced, fixed market made from thin air. It's as if a whole giant currency might wink into existence. And so, you know, of course they're going to pervert science. Of course they're going to do whatever they can. But it may not succeed, folks. I think because of us, because there are so many of us now who are aware of what's going on, they're having a tougher and tougher time. As Joanne Nova says here, Turnbull may poll well in the honeymoon period, but many in the heart and soul of the Liberal Party feel betrayed. The most active and passionate supporters are angry beyond words, calling for a split or a new party. They'd rather lose the next election and get a real alternative than campaign to get Labour light. Now, I want at this point to actually play to you a little from a recent video that was posted on YouTube from July 2012. And this is a speech by Nobel laureate Ivar Giaver, who was one of the notable members of the American Physical Society who controversially resigned in disgust over that statement that I read to you earlier, the 2007 statement. And this guy is not someone that can be ignored. He's not someone that whose qualifications can be ignored. He's an eloquent and seasoned scientist. He's an elder statesman of science, and his view is very, very important. So let me just play to you now a clip from a speech he gave on the 1st of July 2015. Here we go.
I am going to talk about global warming revisited. The reason it revisited, I got introduced to global warming here in Lindau. And I was in a panel discussion in 2008. And it was a panel discussion about global warming. And I didn't really want to participate. But they said you really had to. And so I spent maybe half a day or so, looking at Google. And I was horrified by what I found. And so I got interested in global warming a little bit. And because I was on this panel discussion, I looked at Google, and I looked at Geber and global warming. because I've been on one panel discussion. And I got roughly 40,000 results. If I look at my mind and look at my name and say Gaber and superconductivity, I get much fewer results. Global warming is really a hot topic. And what I said then, and which I still believe, is that global warming really has become a new religion because you can't discuss it. It's not proper. If you say global, see, if you look at Linda here today, then all the people who are, you know, notable people, they have said climate change in their talks. All of them have said it. I don't know whether they know what they mean, but they have said it anyway. Everybody talks about climate change. So the American Physical Society, which I was a member, said the evidence is incontrovertible that global warming exists. Now, think about that. This is a physical society. And they say you cannot discuss global warming because we believe it's happening. It's like the Catholic Church. There are lots of incontrovertible truth in the Catholic Church, I'm sure. And here there's an incontrovertible truth in a physical society. So the only answer to that is to resign. So, and that actually made quite a much more story than I thought it would have. So it really, global warming really starts with these two people, Al Gore and Pakuri, or however you pronounce it. And what they did, they made this curve popular. I know that's hard to read from the audience, but on the vertical scale is degrees in 0.1 degrees. So roughly 1 degree is the whole vertical scale. And the horizontal scale is in years from 1860 to 2000. And you see, the global warming has increased, but the fact the scale is like what dentists use when they advertise by, you know, dental toothpaste, because the scale is absolutely distorted. I mean, there's 1 degree there. And for what does this curve measure? Well, this curve measures what does the average temperature for the world for a whole year and for a whole full Earth for 1 year. So there's an average temperature for the whole Earth for 1 year, and that measures in a fraction of a degree. So what does that mean? I think probably nothing. So let me talk about that again. From 1880 to 2015, the temperature has increased from 288 to 288.83 Kelvin, 0.3%. I think the temperature has been amazingly stable. If I take where I live in Albany, New York, there are roughly 80 degree K difference between summer and winter at some time. And so would you think that 0.8 degree average on the Earth makes any difference to the climate in Albany? Is that sensible to you? Oh, the wrong way. So here is then where the temperature is measured. And you see there's point on the graph, so if you can read that, north of 60 degrees is 167 measurements. Between 30 and 60 degrees is quite a lot of measurements.
I'm just going to pause it there. I just want to highlight the fact that that the new statement, the new draft statement from the APS, again, just remember that the new draft statement only attributes warming by human effects since 1945, not 1880, as he was saying there. Now, he's talking about the official or mainstream view being a 0.8 degree rise since 1880. But the only part of that that's significant, according to the American Physical Society, is since 1945 or 1950. So again, it is less and less and less and less the more you look at it. Of course, if you went back in time further, if you went back another 100 years, it was a lot colder. Again, as I said, that was actually a very cool period relative to the the hundreds of years before that and the 100 year after that, that was the period of the Maunder Minimum. Anyway, just continuing now with the talk.
The estate is all covered with things and stuff. So if you go finally to the South Pole, there are 8 thermometers, according to NASA. That's all they have, including the South Pole. 8 thermometers. And so if you had 8 thermometers to measure the average temperature in Germany, where would you put those 8 thermometers? You know, 8 thermometers for the continent. It's nothing. And the fact is, as I deal with the South Pole, there had never been as cold on the South Pole as it is right now. There's more ice than there ever have been. And so, but people don't talk about that. They talk about the North Pole, where they have a warmer climate at the present time. And the other thing which upset me is that, what is the optimum temperature for the Earth? Is that the temperature we have right now? That would be a miracle. Maybe it's 2 degrees warmer. Maybe it's 2 degrees colder. But nobody has told me what the optimal temperature is for the whole Earth. This is a little bit like American foreign policy. The foreign policy wants things to be as they are because we have it good in the United States. But even the foreign policy can't control the climate. The other thing is that both the alarmist and the deniers, I guess I'm quoted as a denier, measures the average temperature for the whole Earth for a whole year at to a fraction of a degree, and that result is significant. Of course it's not. How can you possibly measure the average temperature for the whole Earth and for the whole year and come up with a fraction of a degree? So
we'll just leave it there. We are at the end of the hour. It's very important to understand that what he's questioning here is not certain findings. It is not one position or another position within the climate science. He's actually questioning the underlying raison d'etre of the science, of the foundational kind of ideas within the science, that you can measure the temperature of the planet. That's where it's flawed. It's not so much flawed in its individual conclusions, it's flawed in its broad fundamentals. That's our show for this week. I'll be back next week. It's been great talking to you. See you then.